Hello, everybody. My name is John Fusco, and you're listening to the No Film School podcast. Today on the show, we have two very special interviews that I conducted back at Sundance. The first with a few members of the Brigsby Bear team, and the second with a few members of the Killing Ground team. Both movies came out earlier this month in July. Let's start it off with my favorite movie that I've seen on a festival this year, Brigsby Bear. There's a scene in Brigsby Bear where Kyle Mooney's familiarly awkward protagonist, James, finds himself hunched over the toilet of a dirty Cineplex bathroom. Scores of people have come to witness the premiere of his first feature film, also titled Brigsby Bear, but for a man who spent the majority of his life held hostage underground, the moment has proven too much. It may have been a long and arduous journey just to find himself hovering over a toilet bowl, but in surrounding himself with the people he loved and pursuing, quite literally, the only thing he knew how to do, James had finally found his own way to communicate with the outside world. In a strangely metaphysical moment, the founders of the Good Neighbor sketch comedy group found themselves living out the exact circumstances of their movie's character. A large audience had gathered at Sundance to witness the world premiere of their first feature film, Brigsby Bear, only to react with rapturous joy and a standing ovation at the end. We do not, however, have confirmation on whether there was puke involved. As I mentioned earlier, I sat down with director Dave McCary and screenwriter Kevin Costello in Park City, where their film had just sold to Sony Picture Classics for $5 million, to discuss the journey each of them took to get there. From silly YouTube sketches to Saturday Night Live digital shorts to full-length features, their process is a great model for collaborative filmmaking. Okay, so let's get right into it. I'm going to ask you guys to introduce yourselves so the audience can get familiar with your voice.
Great.
This is Dave McCary. I'm the director of Brigsby Bear.
And my name is Kevin Costello. I co-wrote Brigsby Bear with Kyle Mooney.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about the journey to get to this point where you had, where you got the opportunity to make the feature. I know you guys were childhood friends. The message in the film is one that definitely resonates with our film, with our audience, as far as like just go out, do as much as you can, take whatever resources you can. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That my whole experience in discovering film and how to do this crazy business is just doing it, like not thinking about the industry and really just thinking about how can me and my friends make shit that's gonna make us laugh and so Kyle, who's a co-writer with Kevin and stars in the film, his dad bought us a camera that we had like picked out. We were super poor and his dad's got some cash and we were like,
what kind of camera was it?
It was a Panasonic ZVX-100B, and I shot almost every Good Neighbor video on that until like the very end. We did a few where we actually got a DP, but I truly didn't know what I was doing. I just like went online or read the tutorials and, you know, just figured it out. But I was also, I went to film school, and I'm not even going to say where I went, but I dropped out. Such a fucking waste of money. And it was just so clear. It was around the time that YouTube was like a clear place to just practice and make mistakes. And we just did it. And that was the best thing we could have done, is just like, we're definitely feeding off the energy of like, oh, people can see our shit. And let's just be silly and have fun and learn how to do this. And there's a number of videos that I am just mortified by that they still exist on the internet. But I'm just so grateful that we had the chance to fuck up so much.
Yeah.
So we could now hopefully not fuck up on movies.
How long
even we will.
How long have you guys been making videos? Like, if you were to count from when you first got that camera, when was that?
That camera we probably got 2005, so 11 years ago.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
and 12 years ago. What was the sort of collaboration like on those videos as far as like writing, directing, actors? Did you guys all wear the hats, or was there like sort of a relegated?
I mean, very collaborative with the Good Neighbor guys conceptually, and Kyle and Nick Rutherford were like the key writing guys in the group. Like they were clearly the best at structure four sketches. And then I was just their only, like, filmmaker friend. And I grew up with Kyle, and I would visit him. He was going to USC. I would visit him on the weekends. I was an hour away, at film school. And I would visit them on the weekends, and I just fell in love with his friends, and they were so funny. And I was the one guy that, like, kind of knew how to use a camera. Really, editing was the first thing that I learned well. I felt like I was really good at Final Cut. And so they would, after, you know, I would direct, but we were all kind of directing each other, and it was super, super collaborative. But I would direct the technical aspect of things on top of us all being very open about, like, oh, this performance would work if it went this way. But it was never, like, me making the final call on stuff, because we were such a unit. And then, but then they would walk away for once the editing happens. It's a miserable process, so I understand how they wouldn't want to be involved. They would just wait for me to present them a cut, and then if they had notes or anything. But they were so trusting, and we figured it out.
Well, then they can also spend time creating the next idea for a sketch,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So then how would that process carry over into your first feature?
Again, super collaborative, a much bigger situation and a lot more cogs in the what is that term?
The cogs in the cog machine.
In the cog machine.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent of collaboration, and I know there's a lot of filmmakers out there who are such geniuses, but really need to be hands-on in every single aspect. And I like that to a certain degree, but I also like the idea of finding someone who I think is brilliant, like, for instance, our DP, Christian Spranger, who was recommended to us by one of our producers, and he did Atlanta and Last Man on Earth and Baskets, and I just loved his use of natural light, and I just trusted him so much. It was so different than me shooting our shitty videos on a DVX and not knowing, hating using lights, A. B, not knowing any of the terminology. Truly, I still am, like, I'm hearing terms and I'm, like, pretending, like, oh, yeah, for sure, use the
laser. Yeah, open it up a little bit.
Fake it till you make it.
And it really was a lot of faking it till I made it. Not to say that I've made anything.
Well, you have.
Well, I just made one
look
thing.
Look around, D.
But yeah, it really is just letting go of control and just trusting the writers and trusting the, and really I want them to be part of the conversation in so many decisions, because we are the best we can be when we're all talking about it and having the conversation, and not one asshole going like, oh, it's gonna be my way or fuck you guys.
Yeah. The look of the film, you got into the DP's brilliance a little bit. You know, it's so much different than your typical Saturday Night Live movie in that sense. And I know you've been directing digital shorts for SNL.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like, as a fan of the Good Neighbor sketches, the sort of framework that SNL provides you guys with, I'm not really sure how involved they are in, like, being like, okay, you guys got to, like, tone it back a little bit or whatever. But I feel like with this feature, you were given the opportunity to fully sort of prove your vision in that sense. Can you talk a little bit about that?
100% true. I mean, SNL is its own very distinct challenge where obviously we can't just, it's on television, so you can't, with realism, if you want to, like, do a scene with a conversation where someone naturally would say fuck that, or like, I don't give a fuck about this, you just can't write that. And that's it's everyone in the history of television has dealt with that, and we had to learn how to, because a lot of our YouTube videos definitely were not, we could not put on television because they have those elements. I'm so grateful for that challenge and to learn how to make things more accessible, because we know our voice can be too weird for people and too alienating for people. And Kevin actually I think is really brilliant at harnessing the oddity that is our voice and also making it understandable to a bigger audience, which is really not something we're great at. We're not good at making everybody like our stuff.
Well,
because
you had a line in the movie that was like when he was in the bathroom,
yes,
and it's like he's thrown up, and then the guy's just like, who cares what they think?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's all. That's been something I respect about your videos a lot. And for Kevin, like, coming back, because I know you were sort of away from the group for a while.
Yes.
Was that, how was that for you, and how was that for you, Dave?
You should clarify, because
Kevin
was not a part of Good Neighbor.
I was not a part of Good Neighbor, but I did hold a boom mic.
Well, Kevin was our screenwriter friend who we knew from middle school, but we only had like a year or two of friendship at 7th and 8th grade.
I mean, it was pretty good friendship, though. Talking Six Flags.
I remember going over to his house to watch some Limp Bizkit videos.
Nice.
We still do that. We love the Faith cover.
Yeah, it was just an edgier version of the original song, you know.
But then, when we were really thinking about features, and Kyle specifically had this great idea, and Kevin, we knew, is like the one guy who has put together long form scripts, and we just loved him as a person.
Yeah, I'd been working professionally for a couple years prior to that, so I just being friends with these guys, you know, I feel like I knew the exact tone and Kyle's voice, like I felt very comfortable writing towards, just because, you know, and having him there, and obviously it was just so, there's a lot of trust I feel like extended from these guys because they already had such an entrenched kind of voice and brand, so I wanted to, you know, find that, but also sort of like make it our own sort of like distinct feel, I guess. And I think it straddles that line pretty well.
Yeah, definitely. When did that initial idea actually sort of like come into place?
I remember Kyle talking about it, maybe like 6 years ago. He definitely had this idea of a weird children's show, being the only person who's ever seen it, but it wasn't fully fleshed out. I don't know how fleshed out it was when you heard about it.
He kind of pitched me. He had a document that was like 2 pages sort of introduced the concept of the seclusion and then what happens after, and everything else we had to build out from there. But I feel like he had such a strong understanding of who this character was, and in so little that as soon as I read it, I was like, I have to do this. And at the time, it was like, you guys weren't on SNL yet when we first started talking about this, and Kyle and I were like, well, maybe we'll Kickstarter it, or, you know, maybe, you know. So obviously it's like, it feels crazy, like how long ago that was.
It was really helpful how patient I think we were with it, because you guys could have tried to rush and put...
Right, yeah, but we definitely didn't. And I had assignments that I had to do, and these guys had their job. And first season on SNL, it's like whenever there's a week free or a week off, Kyle and I were able to get together, and he would fly back to LA, which was great, and crash my guest room, and we would just write all day and stuff like that. So, we definitely took our time with it and did a couple drafts. And by the time we started showing it to people, it didn't feel like that long after we got our producers and got everyone.
Yeah, people were so responsive so quickly once the script got out, and like immediately Lonely Island, who we were, you know, kind of buddies with but didn't know too well, but I think we had always wanted to work with, and they responded to it so wonderfully, and then Lord Miller responded to it wonderfully, and then they were like
so
each other
lucky,
and like, let's just do it together. And
it does seem like the perfect production team to put on a movie like the one that you guys made.
It was a dream come true creatively, I think, for us too, just because and having worked in like the studio system and you know, there things operate a certain way there and a certain opacity, and you don't really know why decisions are being made or creatively. There's other things behind sort of creative notes that you get. And here it was just so supportive, and so they really empowered us to make our movie, and were so helpful creatively. It was definitely the most like freeing, best experience I've ever had writing anything.
So we've hit on, you know, taking your time with the script to fully flesh it out, make sure you're ready to, you know, do it. Don't force it. Don't rush it. But at the same time, we've talked about, you know, get out and do as much as you can video-wise. I have to wrap up here. So I'm just going to ask, based on your experience, based on your journey, if you had one piece of advice for aspiring filmmakers trying to get into the game or just trying to put on a passion project like you guys have, what would you say?
I mean, it goes back to just like, obviously just make doing whatever you can to just make something and make those mistakes and know it's going to, you're going to make shitty videos. I mean, now that phones pretty much have high enough quality to where you can create an entire movie with them, like no one is not able to do this. And if you really want it, just do it. And you know, everyone fucking says this. This is the worst advice.
No, I mean,
is there something more poignant I could say?
I don't think. I mean, I think that it's just like they're making art for its own sake. It can often feel like crazy or insane or why am I doing this? And I feel like we were definitely like in we've all been in that place with the stuff we've made. And you have to do it. And you have to have something to say. And you have to just like trust that. That desire to get it out there and that desire to make it, you know, even though there's no clear path towards where it's going to end up or where it's going to lead, just following that passion, I feel like, is the only thing you can do.
Yeah.
Time we started writing Brigsby, it's not like, oh yeah, we're going to ride this ship all the way to
right.
Party Town. Like it was just, it was something that I knew that I loved and I just and it made it a priority. So
I've got another cliche, don't give up.
Yeah.
Great. That's never heard that one before. So. Cool, guys. Well, I really appreciate you guys taking the time out of this.
Yeah, it was nice meeting you.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, man.
Killing Ground is an unorthodox movie in every sense of the word. Audiences will think they found themselves in very familiar territory as the opening credits roll off the screen over a happy couple on their way to a romantic getaway in the Australian bush. Even with the expectation that something very bad is about to happen to this seemingly idyllic couple, there's no way you can really prepare yourself for what happens next. Through a lethal combination of non-linear storytelling, gender reversals, and deliverance-type thrills, director Damien Power successfully toys with audience expectations all the way through his debut feature, which, I might add, took 11 years to make. Joining Power and I in this interview are two of the film's stars, Arian Glenane, who played the film's terrifying antagonist, and Maya Stange, victim to one of the film's most brutal plot twists. We discussed how Australia's film scene helps to foster artists who take greater risks, the lengths Power went to get his film made, and the strategies he put in place to create the script for Sundance's most mind-bending horror film. Hey everyone, I'm here with filmmaker and some actors from Killing Ground. I'm going to ask you guys to introduce yourselves so that the podcast listeners can get familiar with your voice, starting with you.
Yeah, I'm Damien Power, writer and director of Killing Ground.
My name's Arian Glenane, and I play Chuck.
And I'm Maya Stang, I play Margaret.
Great. So we were talking a little bit about this before the podcast, but I'm personally very interested in what the Australian film scene is like. So maybe starting from the director's standpoint and then from the actor's standpoint.
Yeah, look, I think making films is hard everywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's any less hard in Australia. I think I feel that Australians punch kind of above their weight in terms of the size of the place and the scale of the industry. And I think you see a lot of Australian talent here in Hollywood and America and working in the UK. There's a kind of credit card film sort of scene as well. But that's pretty small.
Yeah, interesting, because your movie is very progressive, I would say. So I was wondering if maybe that scene is more progressive out there, the film scene, or is it more credit card, as you would say?
I think it's a challenge to make genre cinema in Australia, and I'm so grateful that we had the support of the agencies, Screen Australia and Screen New South Wales, to make this project. But I think, you know, genre cinema sort of faces like low budget or, you know, indie kind of genre cinema faces those same challenges wherever you are.
And maybe there's a deeper appreciation here in the States for that, or?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you see a lot of those films coming out here and playing at Sundance, for example. So
right.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
Mm-hmm. And how about for acting? Did you go to acting school? Was this something you kind of just fell into, or?
No, I got into acting because I was really shy as a kid, and Mum was like, you need to learn how to talk to people. So she sent me directly to a speech and drama teacher, and that's kind of how it started. And then she randomly said, "You're going to an audition for a musical." And I was like, "Why? I don't sing or dance or act." And she's like, "You're doing it." And I went in and somehow got into it, and then here I am today. So it was, I wanted to be an NBA basketball player, but it turns out I'm 5'11", white, really skinny, and that was never going to happen.
Completely uncoordinated.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know that. But I feel like the Australian industry is really exciting right now, and I think maybe especially television, because of, you know, all the streaming networks now that have popped up here the last 5-10 years, it's kind of forced Australian content to get really exciting, and it has, you know, some of our sort of cable series on Foxtel and Stan, and even our network series now are really exciting to work on. So it's a great time to be working in Australia. I wish there was more work, but that's okay. Yeah,
don't all actors.
So yeah, exactly, that's it. So but the projects are great.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think because we're such a small country and there's not a whole lot of money circulating through our industry, we do have a lot of government agencies who finance films, you know, in conjunction with independent finance, but it's kind of thin on the ground. Yeah. Financially. So in a way we're liberated by that because we're not as beholden to these box office numbers that you are here, and there's such a pressure in America, I think, on the, you know, when we also have the pressure of a big opening weekend can make or break you, but it's on a different scale, and I have a feeling that that's kind of encouraged us to reach a little bit and to explore deeper themes, and to kind of, you know, our government agencies are very focused on multicultural productions and it not being fixed in one socioeconomic group. So it, in a way, we're encouraged to stretch, which I think is a really good thing.
Yeah,
about
the Australian industry. Also a focus on talent escalation with the agencies as well. So there's support for up and coming filmmakers, which is great.
So how does that work? How does the talent escalation, as you put it, work? It's
well, they support sort of short filmmaking,
okay,
and writing courses. So you know, it's all about developing talent. And actually, there's been series of directors' attachments, so that you know, up and coming directors can get attached to feature films that are about to roll, and quite high-end TV series.
Interesting.
So that's a great thing, because I think one of the important things that is kind of tricky in the business is mentorship, mm-hmm, and finding the right mentor, because I think that's really hard, and I think it's really beneficial to find someone who you can learn from, because you know, oftentimes, you know, people with a lot of experience, they're really busy,
yeah,
you know, or they're doing their own thing, and it's hard to kind of approach those people and go, hey, you know, I'd like to learn from you. Can you help me out here?
It's almost like, you know, the blockbusters, like, you know, Marvel Universe, all these Star Wars movies that are coming out, they're all looking at independent film directors to, like, take on these franchises for them. And it sounds like in Australia, it seems like it's a similar phenomenon, but not with blockbusters, with actual, like, passion projects and things that are artistic and things that, you know, you might not see in a multiplex in California.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your own journey for Killing Ground.
Yeah.
Because you know, you said it was an 11-year process. How did that start? Take us through it step by step.
Yeah. So I had been working with my producer, Joe Weatherston, on a particular project that we had actually in an agency script lab. So like script labs, you know, you pull the thing apart and then you put it back together, and sometimes you just can't put those pieces back together. So we were working on that project, and during that process I had this idea, and it kind of occurred to me as an image, like the image of this tent in the bush, and that's no sign of anybody, and that kind of started to suggest a story to me, like what happened to these people. And so I came up with this idea quite quickly and said to Joe, I've got this great idea, you know, I think we could make this fast and cheap, and here we are 11 years later.
Yeah.
So it was a process. So the writing was a process, and then I think we had it ready to go. We felt it was ready to go about 5 years ago, and then none of the shorts that I'd made at film school were of a similar kind of genre. So we decided to make a short to work as a calling card. And so we made a short film called Peekaboo, which is about a woman who loses her young daughter in a car park and thinks her daughter's been abducted. And so it wasn't, you know, plot-wise, nothing to do with the feature, but tonally and thematically and in terms of showing that I could direct some suspense and action, it was really effective. So that film did really well for us, travelled to a lot of festivals, we had our international premiere in Busan, and that's where I kind of pitched the feature to our international sales agent, Films Distribution. And they came on board at that point, and then, you know, it was another few years of trying to raise that money and get a local distributor on board. And those two are the kind of pieces of the puzzle that you need to trigger agency investment in Australia.
Okay. So you made the short, but you had the script for the feature before. So what you did was you sort of made like a spiritual prequel in the sense of tone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was definitely something about it, the whole purpose was to show that I could direct this script that required a lot of action and intensity but also suspense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that's how you two met, right? You were
so this was a different short that I worked on with Aaron.
Okay.
Yeah. So after doing Peekaboo, then I did a number of shorts over the next few years that we were trying to raise the money for the feature because it's great. It's great. I mean, not only is it great practice, but it's fun making these short films. And the short that I made with Aaron is called Hitchhiker, and it was an experimental. I got some money from AFTERS to make which is the film school in Sydney, to make an experimental film. And I ended up making this, what I've sort of think of as a kind of ultimate hitchhiker movie, where all the lines of dialogue in the film are from hitchhiking scenes in other films, like every single line. And so I created an entirely new story with that old dialogue and came to kind of realize as I was doing it that, you know, hitchhiking scenes in films, not even just hitchhiking films, they're all about the same thing. It's all about that fear of, you know, getting into a stranger's car or letting a stranger into your car. And invariably, the antagonist is always a serial killer or an escaped prisoner. So I had an escaped prisoner pick up a serial killer.
So it's interesting because I got that sense watching the movie last night. Up until a certain point, you didn't really know who that serial killer was going to be. You know, and I won't spoil anything. But how do you use those sort of tropes to create something so unique? And, you know, how did also on writing that question, the way you told the story was very unique. Was that something that you had in mind from the beginning, or?
Yeah, I think because the idea came about thinking about who the occupants of the tent were, it was important to me to tell the whole story of the events around the incident, I guess. So that meant telling not only the story of the occupants of the tent, the family, but also the antagonists and our protagonists who stumble across the scene. And the idea of doing it as a non-linear piece came to me pretty much right at the beginning, actually, because I think if you're going to take a genre story with those familiar beats and tropes and which is great because then you create expectations for the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to do something new with it. And survival thrillers are usually relentlessly linear, you know, for good reason. You want to be sewn into that journey with those characters. So in many respects, this film starts out as a kind of a suspense sort of thriller and a mystery. You know, what happened here? How are these characters involved? What are they doing? Where are we now? You know, what is the relationship between these things? And I think that's kind of unsettling for an audience. You know, they don't know where they are. And I think as the film progresses, as it goes on, there's a more and more sense of, okay, they're kind of throwing out the rule book now. You know, I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't know who's going to be safe.
Right, right. And that's some of the progressive nature of the film that I was talking about, you know, this sort of gender role reversal. Again, I don't want to give anything away because this is the type of movie that you really want to kind of go into blind. And so I guess I'm going to wrap it up here just by asking if you had any sort of advice for emerging filmmakers, people who are just starting off on their 11-year journey to make their feature.
That's right.
What would it be? And actors too.
Yeah. Look, I think you've got to have talent and you've got to have persistence, and that will bring you a bit of luck. But if you can also find a mentor, someone to help and guide you through that process, I think that's a real advantage.
Great.
It's funny that you came up with this idea 11 years ago, because that's when I moved to Sydney 11 years ago to start my acting dream. So yeah. that's quite funny.
Yeah. It must have been something in the water.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Bondi Beach is going off. I don't know. But yeah, you know, I watched a great video on Facebook the other day with Denzel Washington, and he was talking about you know, having dreams and going for your dreams, and in the video he talks about, you know, to get to where you want to achieve your full potential, you've got to have really clear goals and you've got to be disciplined, which I think kind of ties in to what you were saying. You know, set your highest goal and then little goals along the way and how you're going to get there, and then you've got to be disciplined and work out every day. And I that's one thing I really pride myself on as an actor, that I haven't been handed anything along the way, and I've worked really hard to get to the point I'm at now, and I'm going to continue doing that, so I can hopefully get some really complex and compelling roles and tell great stories, because that's what I'm excited about. Yeah,
I usually, when people ask me that question, should I get into acting? I really like it. What do you think? How's it been for you? Because I've been doing this since I was a teenager, so for a while now. I always say, do you feel like you can't do anything else? Do you feel called to this? Or do you just think it would be a fun career because you get to have your face on the magazine covers or whatever? And I really encourage people to think before they sign up for this job, because it's, you know, it's not always easy. And you have to love it with such a passion that you really have the grit to stick with whatever comes down the line. And I would include success in that scenario. Like, I know people who have achieved great success and fame and been incredibly miserable and suicidal. And so I think you've got to love this work.
Yeah.
And you've got to focus on the work and not take things so personally. It's so easy as actors, because we are our instrument, that you can take rejection to mean something about you and your value and your talent. And I really encourage people to, as much as possible, to not make that mistake, because, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
there's so many factors in getting a role.
Same thing goes for filmmakers, I think, too. You know, you really got to be 100% committed to it.
Yeah, and believe in what you do. Love what you do and focus on that. Don't measure yourself and compare yourself to what's going on around you, because you can just psych yourself out. You gotta keep the faith.
Well, congrats, guys. It was awesome. Killing Ground. See it when it comes to America.
Thank you so much for having
come
us.
Come camping
Thank
in
you.
Australia.
Yeah, yeah. Don't go camping in Australia. Thanks for listening to today's Twofer, everybody. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to the No Film School podcast on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you use. Give us a nice little 5-star rating if you really like us, and be sure to tune in to Indie Film Weekly this Thursday. I'm John Fusco. You can follow me at Jim_John_Jim on Twitter, and you can follow No Film School at No Film School. See you Thursday.